Suki Hantu. So today will be my last day talk. And before I shift from the talk on concentration to insight, moment to moment practice, I have something to say first. When practice insight concentration meditation, as concentration comes very slow. So one day we have 5 sittings. If you happen to get 1 or 2 sitting, good sitting, you should feel contented. And 3 or 4 sitting is terrible, the mind all over the place, also no problem. Because it's very difficult to have good sitting all the time. Even for advanced meditator, one day 5 sittings, maybe he get three good sittings only. 2 sittings are terrible. Therefore, you should not feel discouraged why your concentration is up and down. It's very common, natural, for those who have not yet reached absorption. So the concentration is up and down. So if you can aim, one day I get 2 good sitting or even 1, I should be glad, contented enough. Okay, don't be too idealistic. Every sitting must be good. That's not possible, unless you already attain jhana. Okay, so not to feel discouraged. And secondly, as I mentioned many times, when a yogi attain or see the light, for most people, the nature of the mind, when one sees the light, then he is full of enthusiasm, become very enthusiastic. Then he sit with great expectation. And because of that hoping, expectation, the mind is tense up, no more calm. Therefore, the nimitta which appeared previously will not arise, will not come back. Therefore, once you have experienced that light or nimitta, after get up from sitting, forget it. Forget it. Don't think about it. But what you should think is how you get into that concentration. If you know how you get into that concentration, then the nimitta will come again. So the key is how you get into that concentration, not hoping that nimitta to come back again. If not, you waste your time again and again. Every time sit with great expectation and it never come. And when once you let go of that expectation, sure it will come back. So if you want your nimitta to come back, let go your expectation. Just practice for the sake of practice, that's all. The result, the Dhamma will unfold itself. Okay? And also, another point, previously I mentioned the nimitta, there are 3 types of nimitta. One is called parikama nimitta, gray color. The second one, learning sign, ugaha nimitta, white color. And the third one, radiant, like crystal, morning star, sunlight. Patibhaga nimitta, counterpart sign. This is mentioned in the Visuddhimagga. However, through our interview with thousands of people, many people experience more than that. And also many people see the blue color, yellow color, reddish color, purple color, different colors. So if you see different colors, is also considered nimitta in front of you, not far. Far from your nostril or in front of your face is not considered nimitta. It's considered light. Light and nimitta is different. Just like sun and sunlight are different. Nimitta must be close to the nostril or in front of you. Therefore, at the first place, I ask you to put your attention under the nostril because nimitta come from here. Okay, if come from far, no. Only come close, we consider it nimitta. And different people, different color. And also different shape and form. The form can be changed. One person with each person experience differently. Some people experience like lotus flower. Some people experience it like the wheel. Some people experience it like a tree. So different form, different shape. But form and shape is not important. Therefore, I do not emphasize it. Important is brightness. And also important is stability, stable of the light of the nimitta. If it's not stable, come and go, how can you focus on it? Therefore, brightness and stability of the nimitta are important point, not the form, not the color. Okay. So don't pay too much attention to the color and form. Okay. And also yesterday I mentioned that five mastery of jhana. After that I regret. Because I go too far. I go too far. It's overwhelming for you. Yeah. And also you feel discouraged. Today I will encourage you again. Okay. I just feel that, you know, because no one will talk the way I talk to you. I just give you an opportunity to expose to the deep teaching of the Buddha. I don't mean that to discourage you, okay? However, today when you listen, when you finish what I talk today, you will feel encouraged again, okay? So this is the role of a teacher. Sometimes I have to keep on trying to encourage the students, okay? To attain first jhana is not difficult. In Pa'au Center, Pa'au Myanmar, Murmur, in my center, many people can attain first jhana. If you can go for intensive retreat for 3 months to 6 months. For 10 days to attain first jhana, I don't think you can get it. But at least you know the technique. Correct technique is very important. For example, if you don't know, you only focus on the touching point, only sensation, you never hit the jhana. At least now you know, your focus is not sensation. It's the in-breath and out-breath. So, and how to keep your attention, ignore the pain, ignore all the thoughts, ignore all the sensation in the body. If nobody tell you, then you breathe in, breathe out, there's pain, your mind go to the pain, then come back again. Then you might go to somewhere else, come again. And how can you develop jhana? Therefore, correct technique is very important to lead you to deep concentration. Although you cannot get the jhana in 10 days retreat, at least you have clear understanding, clear picture of how to practice anapanasati correctly. Isn't that worth it? That is encouraging. So it's worth it, right? If not, you may stuck in the wrong method for years, 10 years. Then the light just like that never become brilliant because you practice wrongly, right? Therefore, correct technique is very important. Then you get, when you grasp the correct technique, when you go back home without teacher, you still know how to proceed. And you know already there is light. Light will come. And when light come, how not to pay attention to it? Only when light stable, then how to pay attention to it? At least you know how to practice now without the teacher around you when you go back home. But if you aim to hit the jhana, I will encourage you to go for intensive retreat at least for 3 months. The chances to get the jhana is extremely high. Okay? So as a layperson, you may not have 3 months, but desire is very important. The will is important. If you have the will, no, to have 3 months time to go for a retreat, the Dharma will take care of you. But if you never have this will, You always think negatively, not possible, not possible. Then the Dhamma will not manifest in your mind. Will is very important. Inclination of the mind, I must have 3 months retreat intensively and hit the jhana. Then the Dhamma just manifests itself. This is very important. Okay? So don't be discouraged. Don't think that it takes many years to achieve jhana. No. In our monastery, so many people attain jhana. It's just time factor. Time factor and a competent teacher. If you have these two, you are bound to hit it. Okay? And then you may think that, okay, if I attend first jhana, yesterday sister say the five mastery is so difficult. No, not possible for me. Okay, then today I will tell you, without this five mastery of jhana, you still can become arahant. I will quote a sutta from you. I will quote a sutta from Anguttara Nikaya, the book of 11, Dasama Sutta. So Dasama Sutta, Dasama is a lay person who keep it precept in his daily life. You know it precept, right? He keep it precept in his daily life. So one day he went to see Venerable Ananda and he asked a question which you will be very interested. He asked, Venerable Sir, is there any one thing properly expounded by the Blessed One, the Arahant, the fully enlightened one, such that if a yogi, if a monk, if a practitioner who practice diligently, ardently, persistently, resolute in it, in his practice, and his undiverted mind is liberated, his undestroyed taints are destroyed, and he attained the eternal nibbana, the suffering, the end of suffering, and the eternal peace. Is it this important question? Is there any one thing, only one thing, only one thing can lead to a practitioner to the liberation of the mind and reach the nibbana if he practice persistently and resolute in it? Then Venerable Ananda say, yes, there is. Then Dasama say, what is it? What is it? Okay, then the Venerable Ananda say, if a monk, a practitioner enter into first jhana, quite secluded from sensual desire, secluded from unwholesome mental states, a practitioner, enter into first jhana with application of the mind and sustain application of the mind accompanied by rapture and pleasure born of seclusion. First jhana, okay? First jhana. After that, after first jhana, then he emerged from the first jhana, then he recollect. This first jhana is conditioned, is constructed, is conditioned. It's conditioned by volition. Your volition want to enter into first jhana. Your volition want to achieve the first jhana. So it's constructed, conditioned, and produced by volition. And whatever is constructed, conditioned, and produced by volitions are impermanent, anicca, are subject to change, subject to cessation. So after emerging from the first jhana, he discerned the mental factors, five jhana factors initial application of the mind, sustained application of mind, rupture, pleasure, happiness, and ekagata. These five jhana factors are impermanent, are constructed, are conditioned, produced by volition. And these five jhana factors are impermanent, impermanent, subject to change. And if he is firm in it, firm in this impermanence, firm in this anicca, then he attained the liberation of the mind. He attained the destruction of the taints. Very easy. No need to go find mastery of jhana. Forget it. Right? But if he still has delight in the dharma, if he still has lust in the dharma, what does it mean delight in the dharma? If he still has delight in the dharma, means that if he still has some clinging to the existence, that he want to reborn again in the Brahma world, in the heaven Brahma world, where there's no, where there's only jhana bliss, only jhana bliss. So if he still has some delight in the dharma, then after remove the five jhana, after the utter destruction of five lower factors, destruction of five lower factors, what are the five lower factors? First, sakkaya ditthi, personality view. Second, doubt about triple gems. Third, clinging to rites and rituals. Fourth, sensual desire. Fifth, ill will. So after completely destroy all these five lower factors, he will be reborn spontaneously in the pure abode, Brahma world, and attained arahantship there without coming back to this world again. Discouraging enough? Or encouraging enough? No? I mean that if you attain first jhana, then you contemplate impermanence of your jhana factor again and again, and if you are firm in it, you are bound to become arahant. Not enough. Not encouraging enough. Okay, if not encouraging enough, today I will share with you moment-to-moment practice. Another way for you to try, okay? Okay, since this is what Buddha said, just now, the one you should have confidence, what Buddha said, just one thing. Anapana, after first jhana, immerse, you don't have to go to second jhana, third jhana, fourth jhana, not necessary. But if you want, it's okay. Because once you attain first jhana, second jhana also very, very easy. But if you don't want, after first jhana, you emerge, then contemplate impermanence. Without contemplate impermanence, suffering, and non-self, you cannot become arahant. Please remember, okay? Okay, but even in this retreat, some people feel, concentration is so difficult. Is there any other way? Yes, there is, okay? That's called moment-to-moment practice, that you get it now. And this practice, because I came from Pa'ao Center, in the forest monastery, I stayed there for more than 10 years. And I realized most concentration practitioners, they may have very good concentration. But after they get up from the seat, they become very unmindful. Just like I said before, just like a prisoner, just released from prison, go out already, become very unmindful. And in their daily life, when there are defilements that arise in their mind, they don't know how to handle it. So after many years, 10 years, more than 10 years in Pa'ao Center, I start to have a lot of questions about how concentration helps a person. So finally, and by the studying of many, many suttas and with my own practice, I come up with this moment-to-moment practice. And now I practice this in my daily life. It changed me. It changed me. So today I would like to share with you. Okay. And this practice is also very effective and important for laypersons, because laypersons don't have so much time as monastic. So they cannot have so many times sit on the cushion for a few hours. Since you do not have so much time, then you better carry this Dhamma, moment to moment practice in your daily life. That it will help you a lot. Okay. So as I said many times, our sense bases, when we are awake, the sense bases are keep on opening. The sense bases are open to the impingement of six sense external objects. Eyes to the form, ear to the sound, nose to the smell, tongue to the taste, body to the tangible, and mind to mental objects. And when the six external objects are pleasant, then when they imprint the six sense spaces, immediately pleasant feeling arises, followed by craving. But if the external objects are not pleasant, are repulsive, are not pleasant, then immediately when they impinge to the senses, immediately unpleasant feeling arise that leads to aversion, agitation, anger. So if we keep on react in the same way, whenever there's impingement and we react with craving, attachment or aversion, agitation, then we have no calmness in the mind. There's no peace in the mind. Not only that, we suffer on the spot owing to this craving, attachment, agitation, resentment, anger, and so on. Not only that, we also accumulate a lot of unwholesome karma. I told you already, a lot of unwholesome karma that will be stored up. When the time comes, we suffer again. Therefore, how can we break this habitual conditioned change or habitual conditioned reaction? How to break it so that we will not react in the same way again and again? Especially we are a practitioner. We have been spending time, years practicing the Dharma. We should not react like a person who do not practice the Dharma. So how can we break this habitual reaction? That clinging to the pleasant object and irritated to the unpleasant object. By way of mindfulness and wisdom. By way of mindfulness and wisdom. Okay, now we put aside concentration. From today onward, we are going to practice mindfulness and wisdom, last day. Okay, so what is mindfulness? What is mindfulness? Mindfulness means you recognize what is happening in the body and mind at this moment. What is happening in the body and mind at this very moment, you know, you recognize it. For example, there's sensation arising from your body, you know it, you recognize it. When there's pain, you recognize it. When there's agitation in the mind, you know it. When there's lust in the mind, you know it, you recognize it. This is one part of mindfulness. but just recognize not enough. Huh? You recognize it, and secondly, you do not react to it. If you recognize, for example, anger arises in me. I recognize there's anger arises in me, but I react to the anger. I get very angry, become very hot, whole body become very hot, and I want to utter harsh speech, I want to beat people, I want to tell something bad. This is called reaction. Then, no more mindfulness. Right? Therefore, mindfulness means two things. One, you recognize first. If you don't even recognize, then your reaction becomes so compulsive, you react so fast. But when you recognize it, at least slow down a little bit. You slow down a little bit. Then secondly, you must accept whatever happened in your mind and body, accept them as they are. If there's anger, so what? Accept it. Anger. Accept it. Don't react to that anger. If there's craving, lust, recognize it. Then accept it. Acceptance means don't react. Don't react it with your karma, with your bodily action or verbal action. You let it stay at the mental level only. For example, lust arise in you. Let it stay at the mental level. Don't act through body or through your speech. So this is called mindfulness. And mindfulness is free from judgment. Free from bias, preference. If your mindfulness is associated with preference, then you will like this, you do not like that. Or if your mindfulness is associated with bias, then you will bias this and do not like that also. So your mindfulness is free from judgmental, free from bias and preference. That the mind stay neutral, stay in the center. Okay. So these two are called mindfulness. But mindfulness alone is never enough. It's only enough for you not to react only. Mindfulness is enough for you not to react only. And mindfulness is like brake system in a car. Suppose you're driving a car without brake. Your brake spoiled in a car. Then you drive, then when there's a red light in front of you, but there's no brake in the car, what will happen? Accident. So when there's accident, you hurt yourself. And you also knock down somebody, not only yourself alone, you also hurt another person. So when there's no mindfulness, you imagine there's no brake system in the car, you meet accident here and now, all the times. But if you have car, if you have brake system in the car, so when you drive your car, there's red light, you know how to brake. So whenever you have mindfulness, you know how to brake, you do not react. So now is it clear what's the meaning of mindfulness? Okay, but not enough. Okay, another. The most important point and most important teaching of the Buddha is wisdom, panya, not mindfulness. Although mindfulness is largely practiced in USA, but mindfulness is not a core teaching of the Buddha, remember. Panya, wisdom, insight, knowledge, is the core, is the most essential teaching of the Buddha. Okay, what is this wisdom? Panya. Wisdom dispel the darkness of ignorance that conceals the universal three characteristics of all phenomena. What are the three universal characteristic of all phenomena, including your body and mind and external body and mind? What are these three universal characteristics? What are they?
Suffering, Anicca.
Yeah, anicca, impermanent, dukkha, suffering, unsatisfactory, and non-self anatta. Okay, so this part of the insight of wisdom. Then wisdom also penetrates into four noble truths. When a person attained stream enterer, the wisdom faculties penetrates into four noble truths. What's the first noble truth? Five aggregate of clinging. Five aggregates subject to clinging. What are the five aggregates? Form, feelings, perceptions, formations, and consciousness. These five aggregates make up so-called a self, a permanent self. A self is only conventional truth for easy communication. Myself, himself, herself, just for convenient sake. But ultimately, self consists only five aggregates. And these five aggregates subject to clinging, subject to craving, subject to clinging as mine, and subject to clinging as myself with wrong view or personality view. And this noble truth of suffering must be thoroughly known. Without thoroughly known, these five aggregates of clinging are the truth of suffering. The realization of Nibbana is impossible. Therefore, we keep on observing the mind and body in order to thoroughly know their suffering nature, in order to thoroughly know their impermanent nature, their suffering nature, and non-self nature. Without thoroughly knowing this noble truth of suffering, the realization of Nibbana is impossible. Okay, then what's second noble truth? What's second noble truth? The origin of the suffering. What is the origin of suffering? Craving. There are three types of craving. What are the three types of craving? Craving for sensual pleasures. The six sense object, six sense bases always like to hear, like to see, like to think, like to taste, like to smell. Okay? It's called craving for sensual pleasures. But there's also another very intense craving. We call craving for existence. We don't want to die. Who want to die? Nobody want to die. Why? Because we want to live forever. This is called craving for existence. It's also very strong craving. Even the anagami, the noble one, still have this craving. Therefore, he cannot attain arahantship in this human life. He craved for one more birth in the heaven. So this craving for existence is also very strong hindrance for a person to attain the arahantship. Okay, so and this craving is to be removed. The normal truth of suffering is to be known, and the origin of the truth of suffering is to be removed by path and fruition consciousness, by stream entry, path and fruition consciousness, by once returning path and fruition consciousness, and by non-returner path consciousness, and also by arahant path consciousness. Okay. Then the third noble truth. What is the third noble truth? The cessation of all suffering. Nirodha. Ariya Satcha. Nirodha. Nirodha means cessation. Since the craving is the origin of suffering, then the cessation means the very cessation of that craving. Because craving is the origin of suffering, when that craving for sense pleasures and for existence are completely destroyed, then one attains Nibbana, the cessation of suffering. Okay, and this the Nirodha, Nirodha, the cessation of the normal truth of the cessation of suffering must be realized. Okay, the last one. In order to realize this completely cessation of suffering, you must walk the path. What is the path that you must walk? There's only one path. Noble Eightfold Path. Noble Eightfold Path. Noble Eightfold Path consists of eight factors. First, right view. Right view about three. Right view about the law of karma, cause and effect. Right view about what is wholesome, what is unwholesome. Right view about Four Noble Truths, and right view about three universal characteristics. Okay, this is called right view. You must know all these things before you can realize Nibbana. Then the second one, right thoughts, right thinking. The third one, right speech, right action, and right livelihood. And the sixth, right effort. Seven, right mindfulness. Right mindfulness including satipatthana, four foundation of mindfulness. And the last one, right concentration. We have practiced so many days. Right concentration. It's called right concentration. Okay. So if we walk this Noble Eightfold Path, then we will realize Nibbana. And this Noble Eightfold Path must be completely or must be developed fully, not partially, fully. Okay. So wisdom. What's wisdom? Wisdom penetrate into this Four Noble Truths. And wisdom also understand the three universal characteristics of anicca, dukkha, anatta. Okay. So now, how to practice systematically? So I design a way of practice to help you. It's called reticle. Reticle for you to remember well. So first, when our six senses are open, when there's any impingement, if there's any impingement come to the senses, for example, the eye sees a pleasant object, an agreeable object, then first, you should have what? Mindfulness. Are you with me? Because you're so quiet. listening, attentively. Yeah, good. Good. I want to make sure you are with me. You know, if you are not with me, I will just stop. Okay. So first, when any sense object come to contact with the sense bases, either through eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, and mind, first you must have what? Mindfulness, sati. So mindfulness recognizes it first, know it. Oh, okay, this impingement, this contact, okay, lust arises in me. So mindfulness knows there is lust arisen in me. Know it. As I say, recognize it, not enough. Second one, what?
Accept
it. So accept what is just as it is. And do not try to resist it. If the object is unpleasant, if you try to resist it, then you activate the underlying tendency of anger. But if the object is pleasant, and also do not cling to it. If you cling to it, mean you react to it already. Okay? Do not cling to it. If you cling to it, it will activate the underlying tendency of greed. And also, do not add story to it. If you add story to it, it will activate the fantasies and restlessness. Therefore, you accept whatever arising in your mind as it is, without reaction whatsoever. Without react to it with craving, anger, restlessness, or fantasy. Then you say, you may say, sounds very difficult, because the mind reacts so fast. Therefore, in order to stop reaction, we have another one step to go. That's called disidentify from it, or depersonalize. For example, the anger, lust arise in you. You do not react to it. You have mindfulness, you recognize it and you accept it. Then later on, you disidentify from lust, or you depersonalize lust. How you depersonalize it? You mentally note it. This lust or anger is not me. It's not mine. It's not myself. Mentally note it 100 times, not one time. Mentally note it. This anger, this lust, it's not I, not myself, not mine, not mine, not I, not myself. Mentally note it repeatedly. This is called depersonalize it. If you do not note in this way, since the personality view still intact in our mental stream, then our mind will quickly grasp it as my, myself. Our mind will quickly grasp the anger as my, myself, my, myself. If you grasp it in this way, you will sure react. You are bound to react with anger because you already view it as my, myself. And if you experience, let's say, fear, and you do not disidentify from the fear, or you do not depersonalize from it, then you will grasp, consciousness will quickly grasp, because it's our habitual reaction, right? We quickly grasp it as my fear, fear is mine, fear is myself. When you grasp the fear in such a way, how can you free from fear? How? Not possible. Because you grasp it so firmly. Even the fear want to say goodbye to you, but you grasp it so firmly. Myself. Fear cannot leave you. He's also tired. Therefore, the very effective way is to depersonalize it, disidentify from it. It's very easy, just mentally note it. Not myself, not mine, not myself. This way of noting strengthens your perception of non-self. That perception of non-self has to be strengthened again and again, again and again, until it becomes so firm. Firmly rooted in your consciousness. But if you never note in this way, how are you going to develop the perception of non-self? Right? Not possible. Unless you discern cause and effect, it's also possible. That which I will continue. Okay? So you do not identify any phenomena as I, mine, or myself. Simply know it as a physical or mental state performing a function. See it as if you are a third party. Attend to it as alien and empty of self. Let's say pleasant feeling. Pleasant feeling arises in you. See it like a third party. This pleasant feeling is empty of self. And know at that moment, pleasant feeling just perform its function. After that, finished. So you look at it, you know, with detached mind, far like third party, look at something not yours, then you will realize the non-self nature of the feelings. Okay, later on, not enough, not yet finished, okay? If still, you know, the definition still very strong in your mind, after you identify from it, but it's still there, not working well, it's still there, then you should proceed to next step. That is called investigate it. Investigate the cause of phenomena. For example, investigate why suffering arises. I will give you one of my examples. Many, many years ago, when I was in Burma, my monastery, so I used to talk to my teacher before he started his baking food in the monastery, Pintabata, baking food. And on one day, when I talk to him, maybe I talk a little bit longer. So the time is a little bit delayed, because when time is there, like 12 o'clock, time is there, or 11 o'clock, people strike the bell, then all the monks will go for Pintabat. But since my teacher is the first one, and I keep on talking to him, so delay the time. And the attendant, one of the attendant of the teacher, he's lay person, he got very angry with me. And he shouted at me in front of 100 people. He shouted at me in front of 100 people, you know. So at that moment, I have a lot of unpleasant feeling. It's very natural, right? When an abusive word comes to contact with the ear, unpleasant feeling arises. Buddha say, depend on ear contact, depend on contact, unpleasant feeling. It's very natural. So at that time, because unpleasant feeling is so strong, I forgot to note. I forgot to be mindful. Because the ego is hurt. When the ego is hurt, no mindfulness. There's no mindfulness. So at that time, I feel very unpleasant. Then I keep on dwelling myself, indulging myself in that unpleasant feeling. Then I start to feel suffering. When I feel suffering, suddenly I remember the teaching of Venerable Sariputta. Venerable Sariputta's teaching is so soothing for me. So I remember his teaching. He said that when there's unpleasant feelings, you know there's unpleasant feeling, and you try to investigate where the unpleasant feeling comes from. Then I follow. Okay, where is my unpleasant feeling comes from? Then I start to realize it comes from ear contact of that abusive word. Then Venerable Sariputta continued to say, ear contact is impermanent. If ear contact is impermanent, how can unpleasant feeling permanent? So then he urged, I remember, because I can remember very well his teaching. So he said, ear contact is impermanent, unpleasant feeling is impermanent. Then I continue to contemplate. Okay, I mentally note it. Ear contact is impermanent, unpleasant feeling is impermanent. Within a short time, few seconds, all my unpleasant feeling gone with the wind. And I feel so released. This is called investigate the cause and contemplate. So after you investigate the cause of your suffering, not enough. You still have to contemplate impermanence. That's next step. See your book, see your notes. Next step, contemplate impermanence, anicca. Okay. Then how to contemplate? So you mentally note impermanence many times. What are the purpose? Why? Why we should note impermanence? There are so many benefits if you note impermanence. I will tell you only four. Okay? First, to undo and correct our distorted perception of permanence that block us from seeing things as they really are. What are the things as they really are? Buddha say, sabbe sankhara anicca. Sabbe sankhara anicca ti. Sabbe sankhara anicca. All phenomena are impermanent. These are the things as they really are. But how come we cannot see? Why we cannot see? Because you do not contemplate impermanent. Because your distorted perception of permanence block you from seeing things as they really are. So in order to change your distorted perception of permanent, you have to contemplate impermanent, 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 to slowly remove your distorted perception of permanent. Only then the truth will reveal itself, impermanence. The truth of impermanent will reveal itself. I believe that you all have experienced a lot of impermanence in life, right? But my next question is very important. But do you have very strong perception of impermanence or not? Yes or no? You have already experienced so much impermanence in life, and yet you still have no strong perception of impermanence. Why? Why is it so? This is your missing part in your practice. This is your missing part in your practice. Especially your feeling. You can see from when you are first born as a baby until now. Billions of feelings, unpleasant, pleasant, has already arise and passed away, arise and passed away. What your pleasant feeling in during your childhood, is it still persisting or not? No, gone already. No, even the food you take just now the pleasant feeling already gone, already gone away. All these are impermanent, right? But why your perception of impermanent still so weak, although you have experienced so much impermanent in your life? I want your answer.
Because we're not mindful of the impermanence.
Exactly. You are so sharp. So this missing part, you have to fill the gap. Then you will see your practice will progress very fast. I also trapped for many years, more than 10 years. I practiced so hard, more than 10 years. I cannot see impermanent in my perception. Then I started to ask why. What is the missing part in my practice? Finally, I realized, because I do not contemplate impermanent. Although I experience impermanent, but mentally you still have to contemplate impermanent, 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 again and again, again and again, until it changes your perception completely. So this is the first benefit, to undo and correct our distorted perception of permanent that block us from seeing things as they really are. So every time whatever phenomena arise in your mind and body, note it persistently, impermanent, subject to change, subject to passing away, subject to cessation, subject to fading away, again and again, again and again, until that perception of impermanence and passing away stick into the consciousness. Then next time whatever phenomena arise in you, you don't have to note anymore. Automatically you know it's impermanent. When you know it is impermanent, then you will not cling anymore. You will not cling to it. You will not cling to it. Without clinging, your mind will not be agitated. Without agitation, Buddha said, you personally attained Nibbana. I know you need time to digest what I say. Okay. Therefore, I give you my hand up, for you to go back and reflect again, think again. Okay. So this is the first benefit. The second benefit, which is also very important, and is also my finding, my own finding through my own experience. Okay. The second benefit or advantages is to tune the mind in with reality, or to synchronize the mind with reality. Reality of what? Impermanent, suffering, and non-self. Okay. So the reality of phenomena is impermanent, suffering, and non-self. But if your mind, the way you view the phenomena is permanent, happiness, and self. But the reality is impermanent, suffering, and self. But you view them as permanent, suffering, and self, then there's no synchronization. There's no synchronization. There's no conformity. Huh? Then how can the truth reveal itself? The truth is hindered by your wrong perception of permanent happiness and self. So the truth is always there. Sabbe sankhara anicca, all formations are impermanent. This truth is always there, but why we cannot see? Because the way we view them is not correct. The way we view them is not synchronizing with it. It's not tuned in with it, with them. Therefore, this truth is hindered, is concealed. So in order to make the truth apparent, you have to view them the way they are. It makes sense or not? Does it make sense? If you know all this, you know how to practice. Okay? So, we contemplate impermanent just to synchronize the mind with the reality so that the reality becomes apparent to you. The impermanent is always there. One. Sabbe sankhara, all phenomena are changing, arising and passing away, arising and passing away, are always there. This is the nature of all phenomena. We cannot see because our mind are blocked with distorted perception of permanent happiness and self, self, self. Therefore, this synchronization is very important. And this is the reason why we must contemplate impermanent. Okay, the third reason when we contemplate impermanent is to prevent the arising of craving. They say pleasant feeling. Pleasant feeling, depend on pleasant feeling, craving arises. So if we can contemplate pleasant feeling as impermanent, then craving will not arise through pleasant feeling. So we contemplate impermanent is to prevent craving from arising. And craving is the origin of all suffering. Okay? This is the third reason. The fourth, and to train the subconsciousness to let go. This is also important. When you know it's impermanent, even though you do not see clearly the arising and passing away of phenomena, but if you mentally note as impermanent, we say the power of the words. The power of the words will teach your subconsciousness to let go. But if you contemplate permanent, then the permanent will teach your subconsciousness to cling, right? But if you teach your consciousness impermanent, that the word of impermanent will just teach your subconsciousness letting go. This is called the power of the correct word. Okay, so the next step, the last step, when you contemplate, okay, before you go to last step, there's also one important point. if contemplation of impermanent is not given attention, whatever phenomena that arise, if you do not pay attention to impermanent, then phenomena will remain concealed by the compactness of continuity that give rise to the distorted perception of permanence. This sentence is very important, but it depends on your insight, how much you can penetrate. There is compactness of permanent. Compactness that all phenomena are arising and passing away, but it is concealed with compactness of continuity. If you do not give attention to impermanent, that is concealed by the compactness of continuity. And that compactness of continuity gives rise to the distorted perception of permanent. Okay, the last step, letting go, let it go. Okay. When you contemplate impermanent, then your mind do not cling to anything whatsoever. So that when your mind does not cling to anything, then the consciousness is not dependent on that clinging. When the consciousness is free from any clinging, then the dependent origination will not revolve, will not continue. Depend on consciousness, mind and matter. Depend on mind and matter, six sense spaces. Six sense spaces. Depend on six sense spaces, contact. Depend on contact, feeling. Depend on feeling, craving. Depend on craving, clinging. Depend on clinging, becoming. Depend on becoming, birth. Depend on birth, aging, sickness, death, sorrow, lamentation, grief, pain, despair. Thus arise the whole maze of suffering because of arising of consciousness. So when the consciousness does not cling to anything, consciousness is independent. When consciousness is independent, nothing arises. Mind and matter will not arise. When mind and matter will not arise, then there's no six sense spaces. When there's no six sense spaces, there's no contact. When there's no contact, there's no feeling. When there's no feeling, there's no craving. When there's no craving, there's no clinging. When there's no clinging, there's no becoming. When there's no becoming, there's no birth. When there's no birth, no aging, sickness, death, sorrow, lamentation, pain, grief, despair, thus cease the whole mess of suffering. Therefore, when you contemplate, let it go. When you contemplate impermanent, your consciousness will not cling. Cling to that phenomena. When the consciousness does not cling, then mind and matter will not arise, depend on consciousness. Nothing arise, depend on consciousness. Then at that moment, the 12 link of dependent origination come to stop at that moment. And moment to moment, if the 12 links of dependent origination come to stop from moment to moment, at the end, you attain Nibbana, final cessation, Nibbana. Okay, so once, in order not to cling, in order to let go, then you watch the phenomena like watching passing clouds in the sky. I know many of you like to admire the nature. So when you admire the cloud, then you see it as passing cloud. Let it pass. Don't hold on to it. Don't hold on, oh, so beautiful, stay for a while. No. Don't hold on to it. So watch whatever phenomena like passing cloud in the sky. Let it come, let it go. This is the practice. Okay? So once you are familiar with this moment-to-moment process, attain to the five aggregates in different ways. Five aggregates is the object of clinging. So in order to give up that, remove that clinging, you have to attend to the five aggregates as impermanent, as unsatisfactory, a disease, cause you suffering, a cancer, an arrow, make you pain, piercing into your heart, and painful, as an affliction, alien, not myself, alien, a dissolution, finally will pass away, subject to destruction, and emptiness is produced by cause and effect. There's no enduring self or abiding self in it. Therefore, it's emptiness and not a self. So you attend the five aggregates in different ways, not only one way, not only impermanent one way. Sometimes you attend to it as painful, as affliction, and arrow, and cancer that cause you pain. And sometimes you attend to it as alien, not mine, not myself, as empty of self, and so on, until your wisdom become matured, then you become liberated from all clinging. When there's no clinging, there's no agitation. When there's no agitation, Buddha say you personally attain Nibbana. So this is the moment-to-moment practice that you can practice in your daily life. If you don't have time to sit on the cushion for 2 hours, cultivate concentration for long, then you can practice this in your daily life. However, in order for your mindfulness and wisdom to become so precise and sharp, you need concentration. Without concentration, even the lust arises in you, you do not know. Right? Then you carry away, then you react to it. Then remorse comes, so you do not know. Then you remorse again, then you make the same mistake again and again, cycling again and again. Therefore, in order to make your mindfulness and wisdom sharp enough, fast enough, precise enough, you need concentration, certain degree of concentration, not necessarily jhana concentration. Therefore, every day you have to sit at least minimum 1 hour on the cushion. The best is 2 hours in a day. Cultivate sitting posture, sitting quietly, cultivate concentration, pure concentration. And when you move in your daily life, with that sustained concentration, whatever comes into your senses, your mindfulness is fast enough to tackle it, then to note it as impermanent, suffering, non-self. And gradually, within a year, you see you transform into another person. Okay, so this much that I can share with you in the last day. Okay, time's up. No time for it, for question. Okay, enough for today. Okay, read for. Tomorrow is question and answer. So keep the question until tomorrow. And tomorrow, after question and answer, then we will break the silence. No more silence. And you can interact yourself. You want to share your experience with others, also good. Or you want to go around the whole forest, it's also fine. Okay? So after question and answer, we will break the silence. Okay? Because it's also very difficult to have a good practitioner to talk with each other, to have some interaction, to inspire yourself. These are called, we in a group, all of us are spiritual friends. Okay, so we must know how to appreciate each other by sharing with each other our experience. Okay, Metta Sutta. This should be done.
One skilled in all of the beneficial practices, who wishes to break through to the state of peace, one should be able, upright, true. truly straight, easy to instruct,